the founder of the San Francisco Zen Center and Tassajara and Green Gulch. And Daigon lived for many years at City Center. He teaches all over. And also has a certificate in chaplaincy, Buddhist chaplaincy, and has worked with sick and the dying. And we're always pleased to have him with us. So Daigon, welcome.
Thank you very much, Carl. Welcome, everyone. Very glad that you could join us and that we could be together in each other's company in this way. I think that it's really amazing to think about all of the ways that we are learning to connect with each other and also learning how important it is to connect with each other. During this time, I've always considered myself sort of an introvert. And so I kind of had a really easy time of it for the first 6 months or so. But I'm noticing lately anxiety creeping in on the edges and just really noticing the amount of face-to-face time I miss with people. Because even my work is now online and it's become a lot more complicated. So I'm really grateful to be here. I'm really grateful that you are here. And I wanna talk today, for a couple of weeks now, I've had this quote that I read that was attributed to Dr. Fauci, that just basically said, you know, I don't know how to explain to you why you should care about other people. And I thought it was a really interesting thing to say. And I know Dr. Fauci, I've worked with him before. So it wasn't out of character, but as I started to sort of think about using it in this talk, I wanted to get it in context. And so I went to look it up and I found out that he's never actually said that. And I found out that the actual quote is from an author named Lauren Morrill, M-O-R-R-I-L-L, from back in 2017 in speaking about the Affordable Care Act and why the Affordable Care Act was important to people. And it doesn't actually change why it's really an interesting quote to me and why I think that it's something that we should all start to kind of consider. Because I think that the divisiveness that is often talked about in the media right now is actually, I think, not a political one. It's a divisiveness of self-centered fear and selfishness. And it's between the people who have chosen empathy and compassion their own self-interest. And that's sort of simplistic, but at the same time, when I think about what I'm seeing is definitely this. And in Buddhism, you know, I think the core of the moral fiber of Buddhism, the core of our practice, the core of our ethical conduct stems from this recognition of our interdependence and this need, why it is important for us to care for each other. And part of that's because we are interconnected. We are all, we arise together and we arise because of each other and we are all one. And we all exist on you know, in some schools of Buddhism, they talk about it in terms of a net. And, you know, we're all on different intersections of this net, but we're all still part of the one net. Other traditions talk about it like oceans, that we are individual drops of water that exist in the ocean of reality. And so, you know, we care about each other and we care about the planet. And we care, you know, I mean, in Zen, our first vow is to save all beings, is the recognition that we are responsible for each other. When I was getting my graduate degree in Buddhist studies, part of my argument was directly this, that that we exist not only with each other in each moment, but also because of each other. And that because of each other is what makes us responsible for caring for each other. That because we co-create each other, I'm therefore responsible to care for that creation that I participate in. I think that it's a really important piece of our practice that to really start to think about, how am I caring for others? And how does that get expressed? And how is that lived out? Because it's one thing to sort of come together and, oh, you know, I care about the people that I sit with in a sangha, or I care about my neighbors or people I know, but to really care about all beings or the state of the planet. I was mentioning that I'm starting to notice anxiety sort of creeping in around the edges of my life these days. And part of that anxiety exists in this place of, I see so much danger and so much suffering. And and that makes me anxious because it makes me afraid, and it makes me feel powerless. Something like 9 million people have descended into poverty and basically lost everything in the last 9 months. That's a lot of people. You know, our friends and loved ones who are Black and brown are still in danger, and there are 545 kids still unaccounted for, and there's all this suffering, and I care about that, and I care about the people wearing masks, and I care about people not wearing masks, and I care about the people who think that this is just some big fantasy, this disease that is killing so many people. And therefore they don't need to protect each other. And so what I do with that anxiety is I allow it to have its voice. Because I learned over the years that that's what I do with everything in my mind and in my body. I allow it to register and have its voice so that I'm not dragged around by it, so that I'm not giving it so much power and energy that it drags me around and makes decisions for me, right? I mean, there's a big difference between being anxious and letting that anxiety make decisions for me, letting my fear make decisions for me, letting those things decide how I'm going to be in the world. And this is the practice we have. This is how we, whether it's grief or fear or anxiety or even joy, you know, it doesn't seem to matter what it is that I experience. If I just allow it to have its voice, I can then make appropriate responses in each moment. And I'm not dragged around by those feelings. I think we do know how to explain to each other why we should care for each other. I think we just sometimes don't want to do it. I was having a conversation with my mother the other day, and we were talking about something, and she sort of said, "I don't understand what you do." And I said, "Yeah, I just do what I do. I don't understand it either." But it centers in this place of saving all beings. It centers in this place of doing everything I can to bring about liberation for myself, but also for everyone else. You know, my liberation is directly tied to your liberation because we coexist, because we are tied to each other. When I found out that Dr. Fauci didn't use that phrase, I thought, oh man, now I have to come up with a whole other talk. And I couldn't really think of anything to talk about. And yet, here it is. I've spoken for about 15 minutes. And I do want to leave time for us to connect with each other and ask each other and just hear each other's voices, bring the wisdom of all of us into the room. So I think I'm gonna end with that. Thank you very much for your attention. And you can ask me questions or to explain things, or you can just make a comment. And it doesn't even have to be on this topic. I think that, you can say whatever you need to say. And just to unmute yourself and talk.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, Dagan, for those just really penetrating words and thoughts. And I know, especially for those of us, I think most of us maybe live in San Francisco, live in the Bay Area, but just experiencing the witnessing the extreme disparity and despair in our midst, and only exacerbated, of course, from the COVID crisis. And it is so often paralyzing. But I really appreciate your words about saying how you you recognize that let those anxieties have their voice, and it's kind of making me reflect. Like yesterday, Kate and I had some discussions about the business next to near us, which is seems like it might close because they're having just such extreme theft. But kind of both of us talked through some actions we can take and whether those actions, you know, what small steps, of course, but I think even just in us talking about that and then acknowledging that our despair over the despair surrounding us and just the small steps that we agreed we would take to try to ameliorate some of those, some of the suffering is helpful.
Thank you so much for that. One of my favorite sisters, Sister May Joy Be With You, is very fond of saying, never underestimate the power of small incremental change done over a long period of time by numerous people. And that gives me great strength and and that's been my experience too. Loki, did you raise your hand?
There. What was it you thought, I missed that one statement, what you thought Dr. Fauci, but someone else said.
I don't know how to explain to you why you should care about other people.
Okay, now it all falls in place. Thank you.
I will say that Dr. Fauci was trained and educated by Jesuit priests. So I actually think that he does know how to explain to people why they should care about other people.
Hey, thank you, Daigon, for the talk. And I was thinking about a lot of things as you were going through that, but you're kind of breaking down into the, you know, those who have committed to sort of a path of empathy and those who have committed to a worldview of like, you know, I've got mine, back off, you know, is what it does feel like a lot of times. And I think you're right that it's not necessarily political as much as philosophical. But I think the really, but then coming back to the quote about why should we care about other people, it's like, it's a much harder road to be on the side of empathy, because it's a lot easier to tell yourself, well, those people are all clearly just nuts and they're the problem. If I could only convince them to think correctly, then, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking of my dad, who is very, very left-wing and has disowned his sister for voting for Trump again. Which is very sad. And he likes to talk to me about my ex-sister and all. And he's just kind of processing and trying to be funny about it. But, you know, I think to myself, yeah, I'm furious too. But, you know, I kind of want to refuse to give in to the urge to hate other people for doing things that I think are horrible. And that's really hard. But it's like, you know, if we're not going to do that work, then it is pretty difficult to explain to people why you should care about other people if you're not going to do everything you can to keep caring about other people, even when they're jerks. So anyway, those are some of the thoughts bouncing around in my head, and I appreciate you bringing it up.
Thank you very much. And I appreciate you saying something that I think is really important, that it's really hard work to walk this way. And sometimes it means we have to give up a lot. And and just acknowledging that some days it's really hard. And so I appreciate you bringing that in and mentioning that, you know, it takes a certain fortitude to live in the world in accord with what we believe to be true about the interconnectedness of all beings.
Thanks, Daigon. I probably have a bunch of unformed thoughts here. And I just came out of a 4 or 5 day Genzo Wei mini retreat, and so a lot of what I've been hearing lately, and then thinking about, kind of gives me some reactions to your talk. And one of them is the esteemed Roshi Jacob in our group here, who told me in a conversation we had a month or so ago that I don't control everything. I don't control, the elections. I don't control lots of stuff that I want to control. And part of this being in this retreat is I didn't look at any news for 5 days. And it was actually wonderful. And in fact, still today, I haven't looked at the news, but I just got a thing across my, across Twitter, saying that the woman in charge of transition said the transition's happening. And my first thought was, I didn't have to do anything about that. Like, my not looking at the news for 5 days didn't cause that or didn't uncause that. Whereas last week I would have said, I need to be on that. And so stepping back and allowing ourselves our own kind of space and healing and to hold the anxieties. I was surprised in the first days of these retreats when you're doing a lot of sitting of why were all these anxieties floating around? Where did that come from? And so I think it's that holding of what we find in our own bodies, and holding this vow, this bodhisattva vow, which Okamura Roshi just kept on kind of going back to, of like, this is not the most, I'm not going to call us out, especially people in Zen, as being special for taking this vow, but this vow is keeping us in the midst of suffering. And so that's the challenge, is that we're recognizing that there is suffering and that we're still hanging out here to be in it. And we're not spacing ourselves off to a world that they're pretending there is no suffering. We're not trying to contribute to suffering, although we do, because we don't know better. There was an appreciation of the things that we're doing, of just being together in this sangha, how that is a tribute to our connection and our willingness to attempt to end all suffering for all beings. So thanks for all that, bringing that up to my thoughts.
Thank you. And thanks for bringing Okamura Roshi. His book, Living by Vow, is pivotal in this caring for other people stuff, I think. Early in my Zen career, I was arguing with Norman Fisher about something, and he just asked me, where's your place in all of this? And I found that a really fascinating question, because I think sometimes I just have to remember what my place is. And like you said, this idea that I can give up control of everything. Where's my place?
Hi, everybody. I was thinking about the other day, that movie Sicko by Michael Moore, and he is, there's this one scene where he's playing the devil's advocate, and I think he's his uncle or somebody in Canada, they're on a golf cart and they're riding around, and he's saying to the guy, so you're telling me you have to pay for, people who don't have as much as use health care, like, doesn't that make you angry? And the old guy looked over at him and he goes, oh no, if we don't take care of the less fortunate, who's gonna? And I thought that is not an attitude you see a lot here. You know, people are always like, I don't need to pay for the boy. I don't want to pay for the poor folks. And so I often think about where this comes from, you know, this kind of greed, or I think it comes from fear that you're not going to have enough, you know, or yeah, I don't really know. It's not really a formulated thought. It's just, I often wonder, you know, I'm always trying to get to the root of something why can't everyone just give of what they have if they have more than enough, you know? Anyway, that's all I got.
Thanks very much.
We're coming to the end of our hour together, everyone. So Daigon, thank you. Thank you so much for the talk and lots to contemplate. So as we close,